So this week's parsha is Toldot. And this is the parsha, I would assume more than the others, deals with the life of Yitzchak. Even though Yitzchak seems to be, of all of the patriarchs, or for that matter, the matriarchs, who's the hardest one to put our finger on to really understand what he's about, because he seems to have the least amount of activity. So the things that he does and the things that maybe that he doesn't do need to be analyzed and to be understood. And admittedly, the more interesting or the more exciting thing about the parasha is to deal with the whole Yaakov and Esav struggle, as it were, struggle from before they're born and struggle that continues. And that, of course, is going to continue. We'll skip Vayetze, but it's always there in the background, and we'll get back to that in Vayishlach. But this seems to be, again, more exciting is to talk about Rivka. There's a lot more to talk about her. And to talk about Yaakov, Esav, good. But Yitzchak is harder because, as I said, there's not all that much. One thing that we do see about him is that he tends to do things that his father has done before him. And if we just stop for a moment and consider, and just to think for a second, Avraham is somebody who breaks tradition from his parents, and he is literally a trailblazer. He's the one who goes in a new direction. And then the challenge of Yitzchak is maybe the challenge that many of us have had, and that is continue the tradition. And continuing tradition may not be as exciting as starting a new tradition. But that's the challenge. That's what he has to do. And we find that again and again, that he does things that his father did, although, again, maybe we need to be very, very careful when we look at the details. As little as is said in most of the things about Yitzchak, again, just really, like, in the initial, he prays. Okay, that's interesting. He prays because his wife is barren. Avraham, we don't find ever praying for Sarah. So right there, it's something which is interesting. As we continue, we're told of his interesting love that he has for Esav, and that's also something that we have to come back to. Esav, we're told, is an ish sadeh. The only other thing that we were told about him previously, the rabbis also understood, is him being in a prayer mode, and that is that he goes out lasuach besadeh, he goes la'iterev in the evening. So from there is how the rabbis understood that in fact he was praying, and that was mincha. That Yitzchak is a mincha person, while Avraham is ve'eshkem Avram baboker. Avram gets up early in the morning, and Avram is a morning person, and Avram therefore is the person who's behind the shacharit, the first prayer. But what's interesting is that when it speaks about his prayer, Yitzchak's prayer, what it says is that he goes lasuach v'sadeh. So again, he's reaching God, but from a field. So his love of Yitzchak, which again is talui b'davar, it says he loves him because he brings him food. You know, any of my children want to bring me steak, I love them, but I love them without that also. Yeah, that's right, I love you guys also, right? We went out to eat this week. But that's very strange. It's just a strange thing. You know, it's actually really interesting because, if anything, we would have thought that Rivka's love for Yaakov was dependent upon information because she heard that he's going to be the successful one, but it doesn't say that. It says, Rivka, have it at Yaakov. She loves him without any condition, without any reason, without any explanation. Why she loves him? Because she's his mother. But when it says that Yitzchak loves Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, so, you know, we know that the Midrashim try to say because he fooled him, whatever. No, he loves him because he is a man of the field. He's a hunter. But he's trying to find this thing about him. But in order to understand what it is that Yitzchak is trying to do, we first have to, again, pay attention to the field. The field is the main part. When either it is Yaakov or Esav who comes in, and Yitzchak wants to smell the rabbis are really horrified at this. Somebody who came in after hunting, what kind of nice smell is this? But it seems to be that there's something about Yitzchak which is connected to, I'm going to say, specifically the field, and that needs to be identified. Because once having said that, and we look at this long chapter of Kavav, so much of this is going to be about planting and growing and watering and so on and so forth. And it's actually almost too much information. So as much as we complain, oh, we don't know much about Yitzchak, well, you don't know about Yitzchak because we skip over Perek Kavav. And Perek Kavav needs to be understood. But let me just say a couple more things about the field. When we look at the three avot, the Gemara makes an interesting statement. It says that Avraham is called a har, Yitzchak is called a sadeh, and Yaakov is called a bayit. So again, just in case you thought that I was imagining this in terms of Yitzchak, that's something which Chazal already see. They see these different types of approaches, of spiritual approaches, which is also interesting, because as much as we want to say that Yitzchak follows in the footsteps of Avraham, there could be that the emphasis is very, very different from Avraham. You know, maybe once Avraham planted a tree, we hear about such a thing, the Eshel, but that was one quick pasuk. Over here, we're going to have a whole chapter dealing with Yitzchak doing this. But there may be a second point here, which is very easy to overlook, but once I say it, then I'm going to convince you. So get your defenses up now, right? So to make sure that it doesn't sound too overwhelming. The first three brachot in the Amidah are also called the Avot. So the first one is obviously Magen Avraham. That's for Avraham. So it doesn't have, you don't have to work so hard then to say that the second one then should be connected to Yitzchak. But what's the second bracha? The second bracha is Gvura, which is Yitzchak, but it's, how does the bracha end? Mechayim Meitim. Mechayim Meitim, which brings the dead back to life. Now that is really interesting, but it's haunting as well, because wasn't Yitzchak somebody who was a moment away from death? Wasn't he somebody who could almost be considered as if he was dead but comes back to life? And there's some midrashim which even cross over there and say, oh, maybe he really did die even, or maybe on a certain level he died. I mean, part of the reason for that is that we have a general principle that when somebody tries to do a mitzvah, even if they don't succeed, the intention is as if they did the mitzvah. And over here there was an instruction to do the shechita, and Avraham is willing to do it, so therefore it's seen as if it's done. And we actually, in our liturgy, there are times that we refer to Yitzchak as having been offered, as it were. So Yitzchak himself coming off of the Mizbeach, coming down back into this world, does, to a certain extent, represent Tchiyat HaMeitim. And the truth is, we can discuss this the entire time, but I think we have in the past, so we don't have to do it now. But I just want you to, now, this is the point that I want you to consider. What in the world is planting, if not taking something which looks like it's dead, and you put it into the ground, but then it comes back to life? The whole enterprise of agriculture is one of taking things which are no, right? You take things, they look dead, they're in the ground, and then spring comes around, and look at that, it suddenly becomes life. And by the way, I've always thought it's quite interesting that in that second bracha of the Amidah, we say, Atagibor, like Gvura, Atagibor Lashem, Mechayim Meitim Atarav Loshia. And then, at least in Eretz Yisrael, there is a difference that we say in the spring versus in the winter. In the winter, we say, Mashiver Ruach Merit HaGeshem. Now, I'm sorry if you don't say Geshem, you say Gashem, and you're involved in this whole fight about what the proper thing is it Geshem or Gashem, which is actually much more of a recent discussion, but it all comes down to one point. Atogibor lo Mashem Mechayim Meitim Atarav Loshia, Mashiver Merit HaGeshem, and what comes next? Michal Kilchayim Bechesed. So now, let me just open it up in front of me here. Okay, good. Atarav Loshia, and then Michal Kilchayim Bechesed. So are we in the middle of a sentence or at the end of a sentence? If you're in the middle of a sentence, so then Geshem makes more sense. Mashiver Merit HaGeshem Michal Kilchayim Bechesed. Geshem is Gashmiut. So then we're saying, God, please give us rain, give us gashmiut, michal kelchaim b'chesed. Please give us sustenance. So therefore, it should be geshem and not gashem, because it's the middle of the sentence, not the end of the sentence. Okay, just that would be the explanation. On the other hand, and this is very hard to say, because only those of us in Eretz Yisrael say the next thing, morid atal. Now, what does it say there? Is that a kamatz or a patach? Is it tal or is it tol? Not as in Jethro. Which one is it? Is this the middle of a sentence, or is this the end of a sentence? So it's interesting, even though many Sidurim have Geshem or Gashem, right? But there is almost, there's one Sidur I know of, but I think it was just trying to be consistent and working so hard and not really working over the tradition, even though they claim they are. All Sidurim have Tol with the comments. It's a period. It's the end of a sentence. Why? Because I don't think it goes on the next line. I don't think the Tal has anything to do with Mechal Kachayim Bechesed. I think the Tal has to do with the previous line. Atagibor lama Shem Mechayim Eitim Atarav Loshia Morid Atal. Those of you, or Tal, those of you who don't know, the Gemara, Midrashim, in a dozen different places tell us that Tal is a symbol of Tchiyat HaMeitim. that it, when God brought the dead back to life, it talks about the bones, the dry bones by Yechezkel. It says that he threw tal upon them. It says that when the Jews, by Har Sinai, that every word God said, it said that they died, and he put tal on them, they came back to life. It says that tal is always a symbol of tchiyat hametim. So now, keeping in mind that this is the bracha of Yitzchak, and keeping in mind, again, the second bracha, this is the bracha of Yitzchak, and it's gvura, atagi b'lo Hashem, echaimitim t'ar b'lo Shia, morid hatal, right? Bring the dead back, morid hatal, bring the dead back, and therefore there should be a period, and therefore it's a tal, therefore it's a kametz, and not a patach, because it's the end of the sentence, not the middle of the sentence, while in the winter, we say, mashivuruch morid hageshem, because it's part of the next sentence. It's meaning part of the year there's a comma, and part of the year there's a period. Geshem is a comma, mechal kachayim b'chesed. But Morid HaTal is a period, and therefore I think it's universal, as I said. Almost every seder has Morid HaTal, which therefore is a period, and therefore modifies what was before that. But that goes back to this point about Yitzchak, and this bracha, Mechaye Meitim, goes back to this idea of bringing the dead back to life. And I'm going to say it again, that is a theme of Yitzchak's life. So my point was, if I've lost you along the way there, that Yitzchak being the Sadeh and Yitzchak being involved in planting is because every farmer needs to have faith. I mean, when the Gemara talks about the different sections of the Gemara, it says, Ra'im is Emunah. Emunah, faith. But what is the faith? The faith is that you put something in the ground that's dead, it's going to come back to life. What more faith is that? Which means the ultimate faith is that we believe in something like Tchiyat HaMetim. We believe in a Messianic era, which is also intertwined. How do we refer to the Messianic era? Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. That it should come back, it should grow out of the ground, as it were. It's something organic, which is there, and it's real, but it needs to come out of the ground. So the same way that everything that grows out, comes out of the ground, is essentially a miracle which is taking place. So therefore, in the springtime, we take a look all over the place, and we see things coming back to life. And specifically, what came back to life in the springtime is the entire Jewish people. That's the idea of Pesach in the springtime. Is that we were as if it were we were dead in Egypt, and then, right? And that's the 40th level of Tumah. The ultimate Tumah is Tumat Amet. That Am Yisrael, one could look and say is dead, but they come back to life. So the coming back to life, and by the way, that's why we start counting the slavery and the leaving Egypt from the birth of Yitzchak. Because it's only Yitzchak who is this Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. It's Yitzchak who represents the Tchiyat Ametim. Which is, this is not just, oh, this is a convenient way of counting. It's that, I mean, all of these things are actually connected to one another, so therefore this little sojourn that Yitzchak is going to have in dealing with the wells and the planting and the water and the so on, this is much more, I would say, the essence of what's going on over here than we sometimes will pay attention to, because for a lot of us, okay, he dug wells, they covered the wells, he dug the wells, and so on and so forth. Okay, that's the end of the discussion. There's really not much substance over here, so I hope that in the last couple of minutes, I convinced you, right? There you go. I told you, I warned you. But that there really is this connection between Yitzchak being the symbol of Tchiyat HaMetim, and specifically Yitzchak being the person who's involved in Zra'im, in this Emunah, in things coming back to life, and being the farmer, and so on and so forth. But of course, there's another level to all of this, which we can't ignore, because it's the other piece of the puzzle. And that is that Avraham comes from a faraway place and he makes this journey. But then again, Avraham will always be somewhat of a stranger in this land. And Avraham is, he's a foreigner. And Yaakov, though he's born in this land, goes off into exile twice, not just once. Yaakov is off into exile, you know, a good part of his life. And the parts that he isn't, he may have the fear that he will be, which sometimes is worse. But Yitzchak is the Tzioni. Yitzchak is the Zionist. I'm sorry if any of you, I know with the Satmar Rebbe's visit, some may feel that this is inappropriate, but Yitzchak is the Zionist. He's the one who, this is his land. And you only could be a farmer if you feel a connection to your land. So therefore, I mean, all of these points then end up coming together, and then again, if he's the Zionist, he's the one who lives here, he's the one who could never leave here. So we go back to the differences between Yitzchak and Avraham, which means the starting point is that whatever Avraham does, Yitzchak does, but of course they're starting in different places, and when you start in a different place, then the travels that you take will be very, very different, because one needs to get here, but the other starts here. Which is one needs to get here, but the other can't leave here. So let's begin now. In source number one, Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, Milvad HaRav HaRishon Asher HaYa B'Yimei Avraham. So therefore, Avraham is always going to be here in the background in Yitzchak's life. So there was a famine, another famine, which right away then tells you. So what happens by the first famine? What does Avram do? He goes down to Egypt during the famine. Egypt still has the Nile. The Nile still can help much more than when you're dependent upon rain. V'yelech Yitzchak el Avimelech melech Plishtim Grara. And he then travels to Avimelech, the king of Plishtim, in a place called Grar. Now, this choice, why there? So maybe it has something to do with the famine, and maybe this particular place, and maybe it has something else. Or we do know that actually Avram has lived in this place for a very long time. Not only has Avram lived there, Avram actually has a contract. He has a treaty with this. I'll be careful. Either with this Avimelech or a different Avimelech, but with Avimelech. Although, we'll see hopefully later, but when the treaty was made, it was made for multiple generations. So we have a multi-generational treaty, so perhaps that's what leads him over there. But it's interesting because he goes to Grar, and then, Pasuk Bet, Vayira Elav Hashem, which may very well be the first time that God ever speaks to him. We found him speaking to God a number of times. Vayira Elav Hashem, Vayomer. Al Tered Mitzrayma. Don't go to Egypt. Now, there's one thing which is interesting here. Why do you think he's going to Egypt? He just went to Grar. Because his father went. Because that's always the default, and that's always in the background. Shechon be'eretz asher omar lecha. No, rather you stay in this land. Gur be'eretz hazot. V'ye'imcha. V'vrechecha. V'vrechecha. Ki lecha lezarecha etein et kol hartzot ha'el. V'akimoti et ha'shvu'a she'nishbati l'avram avicha. So yes, you are the continuation of Avraham. All the blessings let's put it this way, the contract which I made with Avraham, I'll be keeping. So at the time that Yitzhak hears this, he may not know that God is telling him, I'll be keeping my deal with Avraham, but there's somebody else who may not be keeping the deal with Avraham. And of course, that's Avimelech, which then takes us to a really interesting place. And that is that he says, don't go to Egypt, but stay over here. But staying over here is not necessarily going to be all that easy to stay over here, as we're about to see. But again, we can't really avoid it that Avram is in the background. V'rubeiti et zaracha kichochvei ha-shamayim v'natati lezaracha et kol artzot ta'el v'tberchu bezaracha kol gei ha-aretz. And of course, zera, seed, means children in this context, but we will see that Yitzchak's planting, the seeds that he plants, are also going to be very blessed, which means Yitzchak is blessed when it comes to seed, but I'm saying both in terms of children, grandchildren, and so on, and also in terms of the agricultural work that he will undertake. The blessings remind us of the blessings to Avram. Avram's in the background, but then God says it again. Ekev, asher shema Avram bekoli, because Avram obeyed me. V'yishmor mishmarti mitzvotai v'chokotai v'toratai. And because of the relationship that I had with Avraham, so therefore our relationship will continue. Vayeshev Yitzchak beGrar. So Yitzchak then settles in Grar. And the word Vayeshev, we've seen before, is a little bit more permanent, a little bit more settling, right? When it says regarding Yaakov, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv, that he settles in a place that his fathers found the sense of strangeness. To be a ger is to be a strange. There's a difference between, that's the way Rashi understands it, that there's a difference between living versus settling in a place. Settling actually would seem to indicate not just a physical settling, but also emotionally feeling a connection to the place. Vayeshev, yeshiva, it's more one, not just of permanence, but it's one of connectedness. Vayeshev Yitzchak beGrar. V'yishalo anshei ha-makom le'ishto. Vayomer achotihi. So as seems to be the custom, and this, again, something which happens with Avram, happens to Yitzchak, who's the woman? So he says, my sister. And it explains, Ki yirei lemor ishti pen yarguni anshei ha-makom al rifka ki tovat marehi. V'yihi ki orchu lo sham hayamim, and when he's there a long time, v'yashkef avi melech, melech plishtim, ba'ad ha-chalon. And he's there a long time, and Avimelech comes, and he's a voyeur, and he comes and he looks through the window to see what's going on inside. Now, I hope all of you know that it's not just creepy. This is worse than creepy. This is very, very strange. Why is he doing this? I mean, what's the pretext? What's he looking for? What does he want to know? What? Again, when you spy on somebody, Again, there's something which is quite strange about this. Vayar, and he sees, v'nei Yitzchak mitzachek. Vayar v'nei Yitzchak mitzachek et Rivka ishto. And he sees that Yitzchak is doing something which is intimate. The commentaries discuss whether it's actual intimacy or leading up to intimacy. But he sees that, I mean, the word mitzachek is interesting, of course, because the word mitzachek is this play on the word Yitzchak, and it's connected to Yitzchak. But it's the only time that we ever see Yitzchak himself. I mean, other people hear about his birth, they laugh. Avram here is going to be born, Avram laughs, Sarah laughs. When he's born, Yishmael laughs. But each one of those laughters, I think, are different. And this is, of course, another sense of laughter. This sense of laughter is going to be used later on by Yosef when Eshet Potiphar is going to say, oh, you know, this Jewish slave came to laugh, right? But it also has a connotation of sexuality. The question then we have to start thinking about is, what about all the other cases? Which means we have Avram, Sarah, and Yishmael, and I will hope to get back to at least some of this. V'yikrav imelech Yitzchak v'yomer achinei ishtachahi v'eich amarta achotihi v'yomer elav Yitzchak ki amarti pen amut aleha. And when he gets summoned in, he says, she's really your wife, how can you say this? And he says, I was afraid. V'yom avimelech mazot asita lanu kimat shachav achad ha'am. You have a street here, Achad Ha'am, right? It was a, right? I always wondered what he was trying to say when he took his name, Achad Ha'am. I mean, it's not exactly the most positive name as used over here by Avimelech, right? Kimat shachav Achad Ha'am et ishtecha, veveta aleinu asham, v'yitzav Avimelech et kol ha'am leimor, hanogeya b'ish hazev ishto mot yumat. So that's interesting. He says, anybody who touches this person, you know, is going to die, because that would indicate fear. Because again, what did Yitzchak say? I'm afraid that someone would kill me. Okay, nobody touch him. So part of what we're wondering, is this the same Avimelech? If it's the same Avimelech, things make a little bit more sense, although he's probably a very elderly man at this point. If it's not the same Avimelech, and this is a son or a grandson, does he have a tradition about what happened on that previous occasion? What else may he know that other people may not know is also part of all this. And I want to remind, you know, there is another thing that we have to pay attention to. Yitzchak and Rivka have a couple kids at this point. So I wonder what anybody was thinking about them. You know, there's a couple kids. You know, where did the kids come from over here? Well, that's my sister, whatever. Yeah, but what's going on over here? So clearly something seems to be missing. We then move over to the other type. So God's blessing that what you plant is going to grow comes over a hundredfold. By the way, Mea Sha'arim initially was the result of hard work and sweat, agricultural work, which is quite ironic. I mean, that's it. I'm not saying any more. The blessing is still there. Okay. And Yitzchak becomes incredibly successful. And he becomes a source of jealousy. So also what's interesting over here in all of this is the Ibn Ezra that maybe at some point we'll come back to, who claims that Yitzchak went bankrupt after this. Goes, what happened to all of his money? He said, no, he went completely bankrupt. His reason for this is that when the Eved of Avraham goes looking for a wife and travels, he brings 10 camels worth of things. And when Yaakov goes, he doesn't go with anything. He just gets the... But then again, on the other hand, Yaakov runs for his life in the middle of the night. But the Ibn Ezra sort of ignores that. He says, no, that Yitzchak went bankrupt. And therefore, and also his dependence on Esav. That's why he needed Esav so much, because Esav brought him food and he's hungry. I mean, the whole thing, I think, is really strange, but if you have time, you'll look at that Ibn Ezra. It continues to say, V'kol ha-beirot ha-shachafru avdei aviv b'mei Avraham. So again, all the time Avram's in the background. All the wells that were dug, we have from aviv, sitmum plishtim v'melu afar. So you have some kind of behavior over here, which is really unfortunate. The reason why I say it's unfortunate is, what's the background of the story? The background is there's a drought. So why come down over here? Now we have more insight, because Yitzchak actually has some wells over here that were dug by his father and his father's people. So he has a whole bunch of wells. This is a wonderful way. You don't have to go all the way to Egypt. And incidentally, it never said he was on the way to Egypt. He said he was on the way to this area. And God says, don't go to Egypt. Just in case you're thinking of doing this, don't go. So he goes and he has these wells. So in a time of famine, don't you think it's a wonderful idea to, because you don't like somebody, to fill up all the wells? I mean, that seems to be destructive behavior, which probably is not in your own best interest, but sometimes that's what hatred does. Incidentally, we'll come to another example of that, hopefully, before we finish. Okay? Because of you, these wells got... I mean, by the way, this is really funny. Because of you, the wells got all covered up, so you should leave here. Ki atzamta mi meni me'od, because look how powerful you are. You've become wealthier than I have. V'yelech misham Yitzchak, v'yichan benachal grar v'yeshev sham. So he moves away. He moves to this place, which doesn't sound to be all that distance. V'yeshev Yitzchak v'echpor eto be'erot ha'mayim, asher chafru bimei Avraham aviv, v'yestatmum plishtim achrei mot Avraham. He goes over here. We're going to learn that there are wells which are dug, and the second and a third, and they keep getting. This goes over again and again and again, which means Yitzchak has a lot of patience. Yitzchak's goal is to redo what his father did. His father dug wells. And by the way, I'm happy if you take this literally, and I'm happy if you take this symbolically as well. I'm not saying instead of, as well. There is a comment over here by the Kli Hayakar, which is worthwhile looking at, because he sees the three wells which are being dug over here, the first one and gets destroyed, and the second one gets destroyed, and the third one lasts. He sees this as a symbol of the Beit HaMikdash. The first Beit HaMikdash gets destroyed, the second one gets destroyed, but the third one is the one which will last forever. So the Kli Hayakar sees all of that as the subtext over here of the entire discussion of what's taking place with these wells. Wells, of course, ain mayim ela Torah. Wells, of course, are life, mayim chayim. So what's going on over here by this destructive behavior is seen, at least by the Kli Hayakar, as being something which is far worse. We're going to skip down to Pasuk Kaf Dalid. In the meantime, 1 second, Kafbet, it says, Ve'etek misham ve'echbor be'er acheret, ve'lo ravu ala, this one didn't have fighting, there wasn't sinat chinam over here, and over here it says, Ve'ker shema rechavot, ve'yom ekiyata herchiv Hashem lanu ufarinu ba'aretz. Ve'yal misham be'er shava, and he goes from there to be'er shava. Ve'yari lav Hashem be'layla hu ve'yomer anochi elokei Avraham avicha, al tira, ki itcha anochi v'rchticha v'hirbita et zaracha b'vor avam avdi. So again, we're getting the same message. Yitzchak is constantly told that God says, I will with you, I will keep my word. If you haven't noticed along the way that Avimelech had a contractual obligation to allow Yitzchak to live in this land, and he has broken it. V'yivan shem izbeach v'ikra b'shem Hashem v'yit shem ohalo v'ichru shem avdei Yitzchak be'er. Ravimelech halach elav migror, and Ravimelech travels to him. Vachuzat merehu ufichot tsar tzavao. So he brings among his friends, but he also brings his general, which is a nice combination. Is this a friendly visit or is this a threatening visit? It's also interesting that fichot tsar tzavao was mentioned earlier. It's the same name as the general by the first Avimelech, which then leads us again to the question, are these both titles or are these both individual names? And Yitzchak says, what are you doing here? You know, you've hated me. And you chased me away. Because we've seen that God is with you, which is really interesting. Because what did they think initially? When he said, nobody can kill, nobody should touch this man, touch his wife. So again, what was he thinking at that point? And I'll answer that already now. These are polytheists. Polytheists believe in a whole bunch of different things. So it could be they believe that Yitzchak or Avram is blessed, but it doesn't mean that they don't necessarily believe that there's exclusivity over there in terms of powers that are in the world. So there's all kinds of other gods that they can worship at the same time and have no problem with that. But now they see that this is really the source of blessing. Yitzchak is the source of blessing. And that's really important. Yitzchak causes there to be life. He causes there to be life in terms of the water, and causes there to be life in terms of the things that grow. Yitzchak has that touch, which maybe also we've never noticed. And that's the whole part of that. We don't see the same thing by Avraham. We don't see Avraham with that kind of agricultural experience. And it's also interesting in terms of the wells, we see much more of the discussion here than we did previously. V'yomru, ro ra'inu ki haya Hashem imach. We see that God is with you. V'nomar tihina Allah b'notenu b'neinu v'necha v'nechvata brit imach. Which, see, somebody else may have been a little cynical. Why do I need a new covenant? We already have one. And what's this worth? It's worth not even, you know, the paper written or the stones that it's going to be etched in, because we know they're not really going to keep it. But it's also a very interesting attitude, and maybe that's what you do when you're a stranger, somebody is willing to give you some kind of a treaty that will live together in peace and harmony. You take it. You take it if it's going to last for a year, for 5 years, 10 years, because it's better to have peace and harmony than have whatever the alternative is. And that's pretty much will take us to the end of this section. Rashi, in source number 2, he's going back to the point they lived there for a long time. Amar miyata'in lila dog. I don't have to worry so much, because even though he had a fear that someone will attack him because of his wife, now, because all this time had gone by, mi'achash lo ansua adachshav, v'lo nishar liyot nishmar. So he didn't have to be that careful anymore, so he let his guard down. The Kliyakar writes over here, v'yikirako, l'fich hear of it. It's quite the opposite. So much time has gone by, and Avimelech starts to wonder. He heard Avimelech libo lemor, im bemet she'achotohi, if this is really his sister, imken lama einu nosei isha kol hazman aruch hazeh. Why isn't he seeking a wife? Why isn't he settling down? Why isn't he getting married? Which means it doesn't make sense, and that's why he is suspicious. He thinks there's something going on, and he looks. The Malbim in source number 4. V'yehi. Siper ech ishgiach Hashem alav biyichud shagam shir kol osham hayamim lo kar lo kimo sha'avram shikra Avimelech rak ishkif ba'arachalon choker aleim v'lo arav libo lingoaba. So the Malbim is saying it's not like Avram. He has more divine protection than Avram, which is really interesting. Magen Avraham over here is saying that God protects him more. By Avram, in two different instances, he gets to places and they take Sarah. Over here, he's protected more and he's there a long time, but nobody there is willing to actually to attack him over here or attack her. And it says they're not willing to touch her, which also may be the remnant of something else. He then at the end says, at the top of the next page, where it's bold, V'zeh shekatav shagam sharchulo shama yamim haya bashkachat Hashem shavimelech hechzik et Yitzchak litzadik. He believed that he was tzadik, which again, this would be an echo of Avimelech previously being told, not only do you have to return Sarah, but he's got to pray for you, because he's a Navi. So over here, Avimelech knows that this is Avraham's son, and he knows that this is a tzaddik. He knows this is a tzaddik ben tzaddik. The question is, why is he so convinced of this, right? Why is he so convinced of this, and what is actually going on? So let's read the Hamikdavar. V'yinu k'masha katav sheya kashel al yimelech yeshiva Yitzchak b'ir melucha. He said, actually, this was the capital. El shalom atzalev laharelo b'shvil habrit sheya im Avraham. Which means the reason why he let him be here till now was only because of the covenant, but he was actually searching for a reason to get rid of him. And when he looks through the window and realizes that's Rivka, he goes, no, you've been lying to me. Which means it's really interesting, because it's as if he's taking this away from all of the sexual overtones, and we need to consider this for a second. You know, are we wrong about understanding it, why he's looking in? But the Emek Davar, the Netziv feels that the reason for this is he wants a pretext. He has a contract. He doesn't like the contract. He doesn't like the fact that Yitzchak is here, it's really interesting. You know, as much as in Jewish history, the Jews got to different places and helped the countries become successful, and then somehow that turned into hatred or jealousy or whatever. So it's interesting that Yitzchak never leaves, but that's why Actually, we can count the 400 years of Galut over here. Because even though he's in his land and he acts as if it is his land and he plants in this land because it is his land, he's still nonetheless treated as a minority and treated as somebody who's not in charge. And we find that the person who is in charge has hatred and jealousy and wants to get rid of him. Even though, if we put everything together, he knows he's tzaddik. He knows that he has a blessing. But you know what it is? He doesn't know how much of the blessing. Because sometimes you can fool yourself into thinking, you know, it's like the BDS movement. I wish they really would absolutely boycott every single Israeli product. I'm not even talking, get rid, boycott, which means don't use your cell phones anymore, don't use your cameras anymore, don't use the internet anymore, I'm saying just do it. You'll be very quiet, we'll never hear from you again. But just be consistent about this. But unfortunately, there's a lack of consistency. But they seem to think here that, okay, whatever blessing is here is already here, now we can get rid of him. Afterwards, we find that that's not the case. Source 6 is what I already said out loud before, is that the first Avi Melech was told that Avraham is a Navi, and he better pray for you, otherwise you're in trouble. Source number 7 is the first time that Avi Melech comes, but here I want to be very careful. Avram goes and he lives in this place, and Avimelech takes Sarah away, and then he returns. All of that, if you look in source 6, was Perakav of Zion. In source number 7, it's Kaf Aleph, Kaf Bet, Telam, Adalid, and then he comes together with Fichal, Sar, Tzavo, and they say, okay, God is with you, Elokim, Imcha, Bechol, Asher, Ta'oseh, and then he makes this contract with him. What happened in between source 6 and source 7? And don't tell me 6.5. What happened in between these two things? Something did happen. Which means something happened which actually was possibly the impetus for Avimelech to now ask, let's sign a treaty. And again, previously, he knows Avram's power. God told him this. God said, you're dead unless you return this woman, and he has to pray for you. So that itself should tell you that Avram is a pretty special person. But what happened prior to Perikof Aleph, Pasukof Bet, when he goes, okay, let's make a treaty. And the treaty over here is leave, l'nini, v'lechti. So something else happened along the way, which it's not exactly clear to us what happened, except, of course, if we pay attention. And that is the birth of Yitzchak. Look at the Rashbam in source number 8. V'yihi be'eit tahi. That's how source 7 began. V'yihi be'eit tahi v'yom avimelech v'yichot tzar tz'o. The Rashbam says, v'yihi be'eit tahi shenolad Yitzchak misara. V'yada Avimelech nisim sha'asa lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'lechein bo ata lechrod britimo. He said he knew the miracles that took place here. I'm going to come back to that in a second. In the Chizkuni, in source number 9, and again, the Chizkuni and the Rashbam, there's very often a correlation between their commentaries or the comments. V'yibetahi kishol desara v'omer malchei ha'aretz b'vadayi kayem HaKadosh Baruch Hu tshivuato la'avram shomar lezarecha natati et ha'aretz hazot. Minahar Mitzrayim, and so on. Ulechach b'kesh Avimelech imenu im tishkor lilini nechti. So this actually created a much more of a religious statement over here. See, the Rashbam told us that he saw the miraculous things that took place. Okay, that's interesting, and including the birth of Yitzchak. But the Chizkuni notes this again. It's a very similar comment, but he's saying, "Well, pay attention. God promised Avraham this land." So that's really interesting. So he claims that he knew about it. If you look at the Emek Davar, the Netziv in source number 10, he writes, "Umishum shaya Avimelech vada yodea." Right? He definitely knew about this. So it's interesting that it seems to be that there is this knowledge about this Avraham. Again, how? I don't know. Avraham's going around bragging about this. I don't know what to say. Maybe God said more to Avimelech in the dream than we know about. Maybe he said to him, be careful about this guy. And I've promised him that I don't know what to say. But it's really interesting that the commentaries are reading that, and they either know or have this sense that this land will one day be Avraham's, which means there's a reason that Avraham is so successful. There's a reason that Yitzchak is so successful, which means the land responds to you. Again, this is today. The land responds to you. That is an indication of ownership. That's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, and Rashi expands upon, is that one of the signs of the Gula is the Jews are going to come back to the land is suddenly going to come back to life. But that's what's happening over here. That's what, which means now you realize that Yitzchak, this whole idea of Tchiyat Emetim, this land comes to life when Yitzchak is walking around this land. This land comes to life also by Avraham, and the people around can't help but notice this, and it's as if there is this sense of saying, wow, this is really their land, because the land knows it. The land has this sense of it. And I'm saying that's what's really interesting in terms of this subtext over here, because again, the Chizkuni or the Netziv are reading this right back into Avimelech's motivations. But I want to, you know, come around this in another way. You know, when Yitzchak is born, we're told in this week's Parsha that there was a little bit of Lashon Hara that were said. Yes? In down in source 14, right, Avram halidat Yitzchak. Al yedei shekatava katub Yitzchak ben Avraham, huskak lomar Avram halidat Yitzchak. I mean, he already said that Avram fathered him. Why does it say it? Why does it have to say it again? Lefisha hayu late sene hador. So what are the late sene hador? The late sene hador, what are they? The scoffers. It's the late night television hosts. Those are the late Sunni Hador. Those are the jokers of the generation who'll say anything in order to get a laugh. They'll say anything because it's funny and so on. The late Sunni Hador, right? The guys who hosted, you can fill in the blank here, which one? Omri mi Avimelech nitabra Sara. They said that Avimelech was the one who actually caused Sara to become pregnant. And what's the proof? It's obvious. Look at all the years they were together, and she never got pregnant. So therefore, look, she spent a little time with Avimelech, and right away she gets pregnant. So what did God do? God, Ma'asakadosh Baruch Hu, Tzur Klaster Panav Sheyitzchak Dom L'Avraham. He made him look very much like Avraham. V'idu Akol Avraham Lidit Yitzchak. Therefore, everyone had to admit that Avraham was the father. Now, I just want to go back a second, because sometimes rumors have a way of having a life of their own, and this kind of sensibility may have had a life to it, and therefore people are going around saying that Avimelech is really the father of Yitzchak. Except there's one person who knows that's not true. And who's that? Avimelech. No, okay, sorry, as well, but Avimelech knows it's not true. So Avimelech knows it's not true, so Avimelech knows the truth. He knows who this person really is. He knows that this is really the son, and therefore he also knows the miraculous side of the birth. But by the way, there's a really interesting comment which is made by, in source 15, it's a word called Ma'asei Hashem. It's written by Rav Eliezer ben Eliyahu. He's called Ashkenazi here. He was a grandson of the Maharik. He did a lot of traveling during his life. And at some point he lived in Egypt, so I guess moving from Italy to Egypt, at some point he was known as the Ashkenazi, because he was the Ashkenazi. But he did lots and lots of traveling. I mean, he writes over here, Ulefisha Sarah Amrakin, Ba'avram Asa Mishted Lefarsem. What did it say about Yitzchak? Sorry, about Yishmael? It says Yishmael was Mitzachek, he was laughing. So what did we say earlier? That when Yitzchak laughs with his wife, it had a sexual connotation, as by Yosef. Hine Yishmael netchaber im hamal igim v'yamal ig ma'amar leitzoni ador sh'avimelech sh'miyavimelech netabra v'zeo sh'nemer v'atarat tzara et ben hagar ha-mitzrit asher yolda l'Avram mitzachek. He's the one who's laughing because he likes this. But why? So, but I want to do this slowly and pay attention right now. Yishmael wants to discredit Yitzchak. Why would he want to discredit him? Because he is a challenge to him. I mean, if Avram does not have another son, it obviously puts him in a much better situation. Of course, there's an obvious problem with all of this, which goes back to our shooting yourself in the foot, sort of like refilling the wells, which we saw earlier. It's the same exact theme over here. Think for a moment. Part of the stand-up comedy routine, the making fun of, oh, Sarah got pregnant from him, and Sarah was 90 years old at the time, and Avram was 100 years old, but Avram had a child when he was an old man, not that long ago. Which means if Yishmael is going to doubt Avram's ability to have a child, he may actually be questioning his own paternity. But that's exactly the point over here. This is the same attitude as, okay, the wells, we don't need the wells. Let's fill up the wells, which means this is the first suicide bomber, right? Let me go and attack Yitzchak on any level, even though at the same time, you're hurting yourself. But there may be this whole other level to this that we haven't been paying attention to, that we need to think about. And I don't know, maybe by the time I finish, I will know, but I'm not exactly sure what to do with this information. But first, let me share it, and then we'll see exactly what we do with it. Avraham goes, and he had traveled, and he lives by this Eretz Plishtim. Actually, what are we told about Avraham? That he lived there for a long time. Where was that verse? That was in source number 7 at the end. Source number 7 was Perek Kaf Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayita Esha Leber Sheva. That's where we see Avram planting something. Vayikrasham B'Shem Hashem Kelolam. And Avraham, well, it's interesting. Avram calls out of the name of God. So what kind of impact did he have? Vayagar Avram Be'eretz Plishtim Yamim Rabim. And Avram lives in this place a long time. So Avram's efforts, again, we know at an earlier stage in his life, all the nefesh asher asa b'charan, that Avram works on the people and he talks to them and he debates them and he teaches them and he inspires them and they follow him and so on. So now Avram has set up shop. He's opened up this center of Jewish life over here in Beersheva, and he plants the tree and people come in. He says, make a bracha. So what kind of success does he have? But where is he? He's in Eretz Plishtim Yamim Rabim. So does he cause there to be this total turnaround in terms of Eretz Plishtim? Or the Plishtim now going to become really righteous people? Or perhaps not? Now, by the time we get to the next generation, we find Yitzhak going back over there. This is the place that his father had, you know, sunk some roots, and he goes there as well. But he's very much a stranger, and he's not treated all that nice, and he's chased away, and so on. So I'm not even talking about Menschlichkeit. Forget about that. We don't expect that, right? Common decency is no longer common. We have no expectations of that. But if you realize, and this seems to be the tension, you realize that this is a holy man. You realize that his father's a prophet. You realize, you look around, and he has a magic touch to him because God is truly with him. And they realize that eventually, but they just can't seem to, you know, take that, you know, to acknowledge that and turn this into a different kind of behavior, because they always seem to be shady characters, which is they want to get away with whatever they can get away with. But why weren't they transformed? I'm saying that becomes the question over here. What happened to the Plishtim? Why aren't they transformed? Why didn't they become something different? Why didn't they become great along the way? And that's somewhat disturbing. Which leads me to the second point. Look at the end of the Tzur HaMor, by the way, in source number 12. V'yikam Avimelech, tkuma hayta lo shenechnas bebritim Avraham HaTzadik. He entered into a covenant with Avraham. V'im kol zeh v'yeshuvu el eretz plishtim l'to'avotam u'l'kishofehim. They returned to their terrible behaviors, their idolatry, their magic, and so on, which means they remain polytheists. Avraham's monotheism does not make inroads in this place. They know that he's a tzaddik, but they only see it in terms of the financial or how it's going to help them, but they don't see it in terms of some kind of a transformation.
Again,
that's the midrash that we know. He invited people in, make a bracha, recognize there's a God, recognize there's a creator. But what happened to the plishtim? He did this for a long time. Even though he was there a very long time, lo laman biderchehim. Avol nidbak yoter b'torav mitzvot b'rot maseim v'tovatam kimo kama mikulkulim. He was still a stranger there. They did not internalize the teachings of Avram. But I want to go back. I said there's one more thing that troubles me, or I need to figure out, you know, what all of this means. In source number 16, we're all the way back in Parshat Noach, and we get introduced for the first time to the Plishtim. This is B'nai Cush. Right, we're going to have a whole list of pleasant people Bnei Kush, Sava, V'chavila, V'safta, V'rama, and so on. V'kush yelad et Nimrod. Okay. We move on in source 16, Pasuk Yud. He's the one who starts a kingdom, and so on. Res and Ninveh, and so on. Mitzrayim, yelad et Ludim. So again, all of the people from Kush, we see them all over here and who they are. And then after mentioning all the kids that were born, all the nations that come out, Pasuk Yud Dalet says, Ve'et patrusim, ve'et kasluchim, asher yotsu misham plishtim, ve'et kaftarim. And from there emerged plishtim. Such a strange turn of phrase compared to all the other people, you know, who were born. They emerged from this. So we'll start with the Midrash in Surah 17, Ve'et Parsumim, and so on. Asher yatzu misham plishtim, l'lamdecha shahayu machlifim nishoteihim zeh lezeh, that they had wife swapping back in the day. And therefore, v'yatzu mihim plishtim v'kafturim, v'lo noda mi haya avihim. They had no idea who their father was. So therefore, from this group, this child came out. Midrash Rabbah says it slightly differently. Mitzrayim yelad et Ludim, Amar Rabbi Abba, Bar Kahana, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Ben Korcha, Kol Minitasha Mitzrayim, Eina Ela Biyam. We'll skip a little bit over here at the end. Hayu Eila Miganvin Nishoteim Shoelu. They stole the wives of one another. From the word ganav, miganavim nishotem shel elu ve'elu miganavim nishotem shel elu, mayat samihem plishtim giborim kafterim nenasim. That this is where these people actually came from the very beginning. Rashi cites this. He says that right, asher yatzu misham plishtim, mishneim yatzu, shayu partrusim ve'kasluchim machlifim mishkav nishotem elu ve'elu v'yatzu mehem plishtim. And Rabbeinu Bechaye just has to put a name on it. Yagid lecha katuv ki umazesh shel plishtim hayu mamzerim. Just in case you weren't sure about it, let's say it clearly. Now that is such an interesting background now to the plishtim, which means, by the way, they don't care who planted the seed, right? It doesn't make a difference with them, and it does. And I'm saying that on both levels, because we see in terms of the bracha for Yitzchak in terms of Zera, and the bracha for Yitzchak in terms of the planting, they don't care over here. There is like this total confusion. There's this different world they live in. Now, would that cause Avimelech ultimately to be far more careful about taking somebody else's wife, which is what he claims, right? Or is that just our former, right? Which I'm just saying, this is interesting and how you go with this, which means when we get to Yitzchak, he tried to take his mother, but he was unsuccessful and God threatened his life. So we get now to the next generation, and he knows this is a tzaddik. You had Avram Avinu living in your midst for all those years. I think the guess is around 25, 26 years. You had Avram Avinu in his prime, right? That's where he opens up his yeshiva. Avram Avinu in his prime. And what do you have to show for this? Absolutely nothing. You made a covenant with him. What do you have to show with him? You break it the first time that you can. You meet the son, and you know the son is a miraculous child. But again, you talk about the miraculous things that Yitzchak grows. Avram has a miraculous, right, child. And of all the people in the world, the one guy who really knows who his father is Avimelech. I mean, all the others can make jokes about it. All the others can start rumors. All the others can say that. But he knows the truth. He knows that Yitzchak is a miraculous child. Which means I don't even have to get to the point of coming back, you know, from the dead. He in a sense, never should have been born. And he's miraculous. But nonetheless, the way that he's treated is this way that it's amazing. But it all goes back to this point of this, again, total lack of appreciation, total lack of respect. And there should have been a respect to Avram, there should have been a respect to Yitzchak, but they can't do it. And that's what we saw some of the commentaries tell us, that deep down inside they know. They know there's a covenant. Again, I don't have to say this in a logical sense, but they know it. They know it because the land knows it. They know that this land belongs to these people. They know that one day this is going to be theirs. And they're afraid. They're afraid to try to chase them away. Well, what can you do? The blessing is there. The blessing is with Yitzchak. Which means the life of Yitzchak, I think, again, is more interesting than we give it credit for, and because we don't see anything. But there's a lot here. Yitzchak follows in the footsteps of his father. Yitzchak prays, even though we don't see Avram praying for Sarah. Avram prays, but we don't see him praying for Sarah. Yitzchak gives blessings to his children. We don't see Avram doing that either. Again, there are things which are different. Yitzchak is the sense of continuity. Yitzchak's incredible challenge is to be the son of Avram, the father of Yaakov, and that itself is a challenge. Maybe it's not as exciting, but there's really interesting subtext over here. Yitzchak is the farmer. Yitzchak redigs the wells. Yitzchak will redo what his father did. Yitzchak will walk in his father's footsteps. But Yitzchak's very existence is miraculous. And everything that he touches is miraculous. And Yitzchak's faith is unbelievable. And Yitzchak's being involved in planting is because he truly does believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. Of course, why does he believe it? He experienced it. And once you experience something, then you know it. On the other hand, Avimelech also experienced something, and I don't care right now if it's Avimelech, the father or the son or the grandson, he also experienced something. And that was the exact opposite of something growing. It's the whole house being shut down. It's this inability to have children. Everything was stopped. Everything was shut. He experienced that. Why? Because Avram was in its midst. Avram prays for him, and then the blessing comes back again. He saw that. He experienced that. But that's a microcosm. He had Avram living in his area for all those years, but they couldn't be changed. He has Yitzchak living there, and he can't be changed. Which means this latent hatred, anti-Semitism, despite the blessing that he brings to the world, despite the blessing that he brings over here, unfortunately, it's not unique to Yitzchak's experience. Unfortunately, it's something that we see again and again. But I hope that you agree with me that Yitzchak's life is a little bit richer than we would have thought of before.